We're going to write the truth. It needs to be. That is our job. For whatever reason, man has to know what went wrong, who finally collapsed it, and beyond that, it doesn't matter as long as you know. There are some things you have to know before you can cut out of this physical incarnation this time. Or you will continue in your universal growth.
This is tape number 2, December the 10th, 1995. Thank you, Commander.
Well, the point I want to make, and then we should take a little break, is that you are back. And I fully intend to treat you like my compatriots. You have forgotten. I'm allowed to remember. I have limitations on my mission. And part of the reason that there is sometimes disdain or irritation with me is that you have possibly, in our journeys together, been superior in authority to myself. I didn't arrange it that way. I like it that way this time because I don't like you bossing me around either. On the other hand, we each have chosen and accepted and volunteered our services. And we've got to sort that, relocate that purpose, and come into the realization of this temporary transition here and what needs to be done to make this transition. And then it falls into place. We don't have to go out, like the evangelists say, and save the world. They will say that believe on Jesus' blood and you're saved. No, you're not. Jesus may be, but you're not. So it's a cop-out. It is a lie. So as long as you hold to the truth, you don't have any trouble because the liars are going to be lost to the lie. But you're doers. You're not drifters. There are some who do come just to experience and drift through, and whatever is right, either way. Just romp through. Just an experience. But that's not what you volunteered to do. It's not what I volunteered and got sent to do. And some of the biggest tasks sometimes is to get over you. You will bury your egos to the point that you feel so damn unworthy that you won't even put your hand up. Why me? I'm not worthy of you. Don't give me that garbage, you know. God would not send me nor have you here if you're not worthy. You never know another's contract, so don't be too hard on the ones that seem to go astray. Long time. Infinite. Let's just say that back in Penn, you were complaining.
I thought you said 125,000 years.
Well, it's possible we mentioned something like that sometime, but don't hold your breath.
That was the last contract renewal.
So referencing the last session when you said our questions reveal the true intent of our heart, of course we ask about gold and economics and we just want the money. For this group here, supposing none of us is able to ask that question, which would be most opportune for us to know, what spiritual question should we ask and have addressed if you haven't already done that, Commander?
That's not the way it works. And I don't want to have all of you in such concern about if I ask, it's going to indicate that my heart is married to that, and therefore there's where I am. if that's where you are, then that's where you are, and all of the other questions in the world won't make any difference. And I'm not making inferences about with that statement either, so don't accept it that way. And I don't know about you, but I would like to have that money. It doesn't mean that I have to have money to make my trek with God or get my mission done. We'll make our money or earn it or whatever, you know, the old-fashioned way. But God has provided some for our needs during this period of time. And it would be nice to have it and be able to use it. It would seem to speed things up. But I also have to know that God acts in His own higher wisdom. And in my own prayers, I have to say, Father, please. Higher wisdom, please. Source, please. Thy will in your infinite wisdom where you can see it all. And I am assigned a duty to accept and know that whatever I get is the better way, no matter what it may appear to me to be at the moment. We were absolutely, all of us, pushed into our various worlds at some time, and we were impatient. And we haven't improved. We haven't improved. Even my imminent is an eternity to you. And when I have to function on your timeline, it is an eternity to me. So don't feel that by asking these questions, we are accepting that that's all you're interested in, because you could get answers from somewhere else without driving all the way over here, even if you get to eat cake. It would not be what you would do, and we do not accept it that way. And I don't have any questions, because the questions are only valuable within self. And if you feel you cannot ask me questions, then I have failed you. I do not accept questions. I may tease you if I know that it will not bother you. I will always laugh with you. I will laugh at myself first. And you may laugh at me. Because we are in this together, and we're trying to get through it the best way we know how. There are no mundane questions. There are no silly questions. There are no foolish questions. Even if they sound like it to you. As long as they are asked in honor. I don't like tests. And if one wants to get into a debate with me, I can also tell you I will always win. Because of the purpose of the reason I'm going to show you up, Buster. I cannot allow that to happen. Because we're not here to debate or quarrel. I cannot say, well, we'll see out there whether you're right or I'm right. I am out there and I'm right. And I'm happy to listen to you. It doesn't make me wrong.
See, now I tried that and it got called ego.
No, it didn't. But it got Captain Utley in a lot of trouble, Daylene. Well, it didn't help it. Let's put it that way. Well, you made up for it. You gave us some beautiful children, and I'm in great appreciation for that. You're going to find they both look like me. And Jack is very patient about that. They both look like him too, you know. We better have a break. This is going to get silly. May we have a break, and then we'll come back and take up dastardly disease. And anybody who needs to go, certainly feel free to. And I thank you for coming.
Pink.
While the commander is getting ready to come back here, I'll start reading this today's writing, because that's what he wanted to do next. You hear okay? Is that better now? Okay, here we go. We'll start off by reading the number two writing from December the 10th, 1995.
Before you start, could I, from the break, Rick brought up something very interesting. Our friend Terzisky, you know, has been listed with one who knows as being outstanding in his circle of influence, if nothing else, or respect, especially regarding UFOs, which are simply unidentified things in the sky. I don't know if UFO would hold true for a vehicle coming along the road or not, but it should. Anything that's unidentified and it's flying and it's an object fits that category. And I get a little bored with everyone thinking those are alien or non-alien or whatever classification goes with them, because you show your own ignorance of language and definition when you call them saucers, flying pans, walks, this sort of thing. We can specifically talk about unidentified flying objects or craft, but it requires ever so much more definition than that. And Terzisky is really recognized in the field of the Nazi element as pertained to flying objects and possibly alien-type craft. And Rick does have some of his tapes. Vladimir gave them to him, I believe, and maybe one evening, if you would like to, we could gather and look at those. It's always more fun to share and do these things together, so possibly put that aside and let's think about doing it. I would like for him to be able to spend a little more time with us, and I especially want him to be apprised of this information that's coming through. These people are going to be a long way apart, distance-wise, but they would certainly get along. Go ahead, please.
So many things. The quantity of material that passes this desk is staggering, and I have to sort the heavy metal stuff from the support mail because Dorma glues onto our cards and letters and tries to avoid the unpleasant. I consider all to be very pleasant, for it shows that you are opening your eyes. It also shows that people are not getting away with so many secret activities, even to our own. You can wake up and join the world of the living instead of the walking, breathing dead. Please consider the transition worthy of your time. Do you fear death and dying? Do you fear suffering and pain? Then why don't you pay attention? For you do not have to have these things thrust off on you. You choose these things. I feel there is nothing more important this morning than to speak on and about what is coming down as to plagues of the microbe variety.
I can't cover all the information, so I have to pick and choose very carefully, as do you. However, before I move into that topic, I want to share an article published December the 9th on the Wire Reports. You all surely remember, such a short while ago, when the government shut down. You remember all those non-essential jobs that were considered unimportant enough to put on leave. Remember well that no politicians went on unpaid leave, and also realize that no one went without pay ever. Well, take a look at this. Quoting from the Orlando Sentinel, Saturday, December the 9th, 1995, U.S. tour guides go to Disney World. As soon as the budget crisis ended, the workers left for training. Taxpayers must pick up their bills. Hatton says, this is worthy of your time, readers. Washington. The week after the government's budget crisis shutdown, at least 200 federal workers whirled off to Walt Disney World at taxpayer expense for a week of training to be better tour guides. They attended lectures on such topics as the power of magic in shaping history, had dinner at SeaWorld Marine Amusement Park and took field trips to Disney's Magic Kingdom and Epcot. According to organizers, about 400 employees of the National Park Service, Army Corps of Engineers, Forest Service, Fish and Wildlife Service, and Bureau of Land Management attended the five-day National Association for Interpretation workshop in Orlando. And this would put the government's final bill, yours, at somewhere between $100,000 and $250,000. Most who went had been deemed non-essential and sent home when the government shut down for 6 days last month. End of quoting. Since I can hope that Phyllis will cover this with her own wit and insight, I won't say more. I hope you enjoy the news desk as much as we do. Phyllis always chooses interesting and little-seen topics and offers us here subtle perceptions and humor and appreciation of the total absurdity of the news. There is no way, either, to properly thank those, such as Princeton and especially Claudia, who stay up nights if necessary and devote every weekend to this paper. I could dedicate every journal we shall ever write to them, but it would still be insufficient. Claudia has her own young family to attend, but instead of drifting away, she brings Alicia, who is now a beautiful and wonderful young mature lady who types, does whatever might be asked without asking, and herein are the wonders of the magic of God. Miracles happen here every minute of every day, and they simply are done without attention or more than a hmm. My knees, both of them, are bent unto these weary workers who love you enough to send the very best. Dr. Young continually wonders why he isn't busier at his line of work. He thinks it rests with scientific greatness. There is no greater gift or service than the science of communication in publications which serve truth to the people. Enough said, Doctor. By the way, Dr. Young, it is past time to print your dissertation that got you kicked out of the inner circles of the professional thieves of the minds of youth in the universities and colleges. It was observant when you wrote it, and it is even more appropriate now with the background our readers have with which to appreciate the contents. When an Einstein is worshipped and everything he teaches is wrong, you have problems in bookland, readers. Real bad problems. I am going to turn now to an article in Popular Science, January 1996. Timely. I am saddened so tremendously by what I know is in store for you, readers. My very soul aches as I watch one after another, and then whole nations of people fall to the most tiny of microbes with nothing you are given by the establishment to help you, only to further destroy you. The very front cover reads, tuberculosis, dengue, I don't know how to say that.
Dengue,
Ebola, AIDS, Hanta, why we're losing the fight against deadly disease. I believe this is recent enough that you can pick up a copy at your newsstand, or if not, or not if you choose not to. We will offer the article in full with full credit, for it is not just timely, it is actually optimistic. And that should tell you how really bad things are. You will find the article in point beginning on page 50, quoting, "A plague on all our houses. Prepare for fresh onslaughts of infectious diseases, new and old." By Robert Cook. Photo illustrations, Amy Quip. Hatton says, "Honors to both of these people." A Connecticut man dies of a newly identified tick-borne disease called human granulitic erythrocolitis, or HGE. It is caused by a previously unknown bacterium. A college student contracts a mortal case of hantavirus in Long Island. The rare virus is carried by rodents and was previously known only in the deserts of the Southwest. In Zaire, a new outbreak of lethal Ebola virus breaks out, not in a forest village, but in a modern city of 600,000, throwing a scare into a whole nation. In 1969, when U.S. Surgeon W.H. Stewart announced it was, quote, time to close the book on infectious diseases, apparently disease microorganisms didn't listen. Since then, in addition to the pathogens named above, we've had an expanding AIDS epidemic, Lyme disease, toxic shock syndrome, Legionnaire's disease, and the grimly named flesh-eating bacteria. Indeed, what scientists, doctors, and other medical specialists are coming to realize and warn about is that microbes could very well close the book on us, rather than the other way around. We are vastly outgunned in terms of sheer numbers, and we are employing sanitation, chemicals, drugs, and vaccines against disease. The bugs still have nature on their side. Microbiologist Barry Bloom of the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York City says infectious diseases remain a constant threat because the microbes causing them are always forming successful new combinations that can outwit a host's defenses as well as the most powerful drugs. Dr. David Satcher, who is director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, warned in a statement last year that because of spreading genetic resistance, quote, our antimicrobial drugs have become less effective against many infectious diseases and are concerned about the possibility of a post-antibiotic era. At the same time, our ability to detect, contain, and prevent emerging infectious diseases is in jeopardy. The problem is that, with one exception, smallpox, infectious disease have never disappeared. Hatton says, neither did nor has smallpox. As a matter of fact, as we've written before, the world government has a whole on-the-hoof supply of smallpox waiting to be loosed on you that has no treatment at all. Despite the ability of antibiotics to knock down bacterial infections and of vaccines to defend against such viruses as polio, measles, hepatitis, sanitation, clean water, uncontaminated food, and sterile practices, deserves half the credit for today's level of public health, and disease-causing microbes are still ready to exploit any opportunity. Few would have predicted, for example, that a common soil bacterium would find a comfortable niche in air conditioning systems and then emerge as an airborne lung disease. That microbe is now named Legionella, after the American Legion members it failed in a Philadelphia hotel in 1976. Hatton says, oh goodness, I don't know if I can hang loose through this party line tale or not. This is very terrifying, readers, to realize that so few actually know truth. AIDS may have simmered as a local disease in rural Africa until tribal societies were disrupted and road networks opened up travel. Now, truck drivers and the prostitutes they patronize at truck stops seem to be central players in the spread of sexually transmitted disease across Africa. Hatton says not to even mention such as the United States. And in the United States, an obscure disease agent called hantavirus struck in 1993 when mouse populations boomed after an especially wet year in the parched Southwest. Hatton has some question marks about that. The lessons of history testify bluntly to the dangers of new microbes hitting naive populations. Hatton says, indeed, just like these naive writers, I simply found this article to be so exemplary of our presentations regarding the non-knowing public perceptions as to be mind-blowing. This should be confirmation, readers, in its finest form. Emerging diseases have had a profound impact. Plague killed one-third of the European population in the 14th century. Tuberculosis killed one-quarter of the European population in the 19th century. Could something with that kind of impact emerge without warning today? Hatton says, no, but who listens to warnings? The answer could very well be yes. AIDS is creeping through the U.S. population, has killed 2 million people worldwide, and is just beginning to explode in Asia. Drug-resistant tuberculosis, especially dangerous because it spreads in the air, is showing up in U.S. residents, especially in the Northeast. Why? For Lyme disease, the answer is clear. We now have twice as much green land in the New York-New England corridor as we had 150 years ago.
Now, if you can swallow this, listen, go ahead and read that. Repeat. That's it.
All right. For Lyme disease, the answer is clear. We now have twice as much green land in the New York-New England corridor as we had 150 years ago.
Now, how do you suppose that could happen?
Someone must be underground.
Wow.
Okay. This has allowed the deer to move southward. Along with the deer came deer ticks.
You know, it all starts on the East Coast and moves toward the West.
The tiny, almost invisible bloodsuckers that often carry the Lyme disease spirochete. Hatton says, you are aware, surely, that the spirochete is the microbe of syphilis, your best known voodoo VD. So, opportunity knocked and Lyme disease answered. The problem of new and re-emerging diseases is so severe because of the natural talents microbes have evolved. Normally benign microbes sometimes find new hosts, or they swap genes to acquire new virulence, or simply mutate to avoid poisons. Quote, the life ambition of a bacterium, Bloom says, is to become bacteria. I don't know the name of that word. B-L-O-U-R-A-L. Plural, probably. Their only goal is survival in a very hostile world of immune responses, environmental threats, and competition. Hatton says, in other words, they are superb parasites. And as the microbe's genetic shell game continues, he adds, we can't always predict which bug is going to evolve. We know that new organisms continue to get into humans, and we know that there are mutations that render pathogenic organisms much more virulent, as in the flesh-eating streptococci. Fortunately, in some instances, a threat can be foreseen in time to prepare defenses. An international surveillance system now watches constantly for new strains of influenza, allowing protective flu vaccines to be produced quickly when a new virus strain emerges. Hatton says, do you suppose these writers are for real? But often the response comes too late. Researchers have known for almost a decade, Hatton says, shame and sick.
Can you imagine a decade? They have known since they incepted it. It's unreal to me. Go on.
Researchers have known for almost a decade that an alien invader, the Asian tiger mosquito, is now at large in the United States. Tiger mosquitoes entered the country as stowaways in puddles of water and used tires that were being imported from the Far East.
sort of like those African killer bees.
Experts think tiger mosquitoes came in through Houston, Texas in 1985 and then began their inexorable spread, especially in the hospitably warm, humid southeast. Having a pesky new mosquito is bad enough, but the real danger lies in the tiger mosquito's ability to carry some truly awful viral disease, including dengue and yellow fever. Hatton says, but aren't you lucky, as we are told that AIDS or HIV is not carried by mosquitoes. The tiger mosquito is a competent vector for both viruses, as well as others such as Eastern equine encephalitis, says Roger Nassy, at the Centers for Disease Control's Arbovirus Laboratory in Fort Collins, Colorado. Hatton says, arbovirus? Paren, arbovirus stands for arthropod-borne virus. Those carried by mosquitoes, ticks, and the like. Hatton says, I have terrible news for you people. Viruses are carried by everything, including other microbes, bacteria, fungi, yeasts, and all manner of other nasty little things. Biologist George Craig Jr. at Notre Dame University warns that even in the absence of cases of known disease caused by the tigers, the risk of a major health problem is growing as their population expands. Since arriving in the United States 10 years ago, tiger mosquitoes have spread to 537 counties in 23 states, some being reported as far north as Chicago. The buzzing, stinging insects are now so ubiquitous in some areas, such as New Orleans and some Florida cities, that they have become the dominant mosquitoes there. In Jacksonville, Ocala, and Gainesville, all in Florida, you step out your back door and these things hit you, Craig says. The numbers are growing and we're not very good at controlling them. Concerted mosquito control methods, such as draining marshes and spraying insecticides, are not very effective. Unfortunately, tiger mosquitoes have ample opportunity to pick up and spread disease from various sources. Researchers were surprised to find that they attack so many different kinds of animals, including cows, horses, rats, birds, and humans. Quote, they are turning out to be the most catholic of mosquitoes in terms of their feeding habits, Craig says. In East St. Louis, for example, their primary blood meal is from rats. One of the diseases that may eventually be picked up and spread by tiger mosquitoes is dengue, also known with devastating accuracy as breakbone fever. It is already endemic throughout the Caribbean, including Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. A victim's initial infection to dengue is usually bad enough, causing symptoms that include fever, headache, and very severe joint and muscular pain. But a second dengue infection caused by a different strain of the virus becomes truly dangerous. This combination generates a 30% death rate in children. In the past, the different strains of dengue were separated by long distances, but now modern transportation is getting them all mixed together in places like the Caribbean, Craig says. The mixing may also soon occur in Florida and Louisiana. On a worldwide basis, he adds, dengue is very widespread, right up there with malaria.
I enjoy this. EJ, you have not pronounced it the same way.
Well, I'm trying to find the right way.
Keep going. I wouldn't want to spoil it.
It's very widespread right up there with malaria, which is seen in millions and millions of people in tropical regions around the world. Yellow fever is another, perhaps less likely, candidate for transmission by tiger mosquitoes. The virus causes symptoms of varying severity, including fever, headache, jaundice, and hemorrhage. Death occurs in as many as 10% of all cases. Scientists have already assessed the potential results of mosquito-borne yellow fever hits a large city such as New Orleans. Quote, "We know the insect vectors are there," says Bloom. "A vaccine for yellow fever exists, but it's not being manufactured. So the prediction, if yellow fever were to break out, is that the vaccine supply would be exhausted in several days. Within 90 days, 100,000 people would be infected and 10,000 people would likely die. Obviously, it would overwhelm the healthcare system and cost huge amounts of money." Aton says the real problem is, however, that you won't have just one thing hit you, and that will be a horrendous circumstance in and of itself. It may be difficult or impossible to avoid lapses, such as the importation of a dangerous mosquito, but many other kinds of public health missteps that open the door to disease are preventable. Such mistakes often consist of simple errors of omission, like failing to administer the standard vaccination series to young children. Aton says, here we go, which can have serious health impacts. Whooping cough erupted recently in England after many parents concerned about rare complications from pertussis vaccines left their children unprotected. And in Russia, where the collapse of the Soviet Union disrupted medical services, diphtheria has reemerged as a raging health problem. Between 1989 and 1991, 56,000 cases of measles were reported in the United States. As a result, Bloom says, there were 132 deaths from a 100% vaccine-preventable disease because we didn't get the vaccine out to the kids. The danger is being exacerbated by patterns of modern travel. Thanks to jet aircraft, it now takes only hours for a Bombay slum dweller to reach the suburbs of London. It takes just a day or so to travel from Kinshasa to San Diego. And, as with tiger mosquitoes, disease and its carriers can arrive not just with passengers themselves, but also in cargo. Aton says, I wonder whatever happened to original disease. Why do you think these things come from somewhere else? Beyond the threats from alien mosquitoes, emerging diseases such as Ebola, and imported diseases such as AIDS, another nightmare scenario has arisen from a half a century of widespread and often indiscriminate use of antibiotic drugs. We know as we throw antibiotics at organisms that unless it's done carefully, we're selecting for those organisms that are very resistant, Bloom says. If drug treatment is not aggressive enough or doesn't continue long enough, the antibiotic kills susceptible bacteria but can leave the resistant ones to multiply blissfully. As part of this drug-resistant process, disease organisms are constantly swapping genes with each other, so mutations that bring drug resistance occur. There's more genetic engineering taking place in your intestine than in all of the biotechnology companies, Bloom says. The one we're all worried about is a major increase in vancomycin-resistant enterococcus, an intestinal bug that is common in elderly patients after surgery, Bloom says. It's a hospital infection. It's very hard to treat, and it kills about 70,000 patients annually. Aton says, even beats Kevorkian. And enterococcus is gradually becoming drug resistant. The threat is that the genes for resistance to vancomycin may get transferred into the most common hospital-based infection, staphylococcus, which is already resistant to penicillin and is becoming resistant to a related antibiotic. For now, staphylococcus is treated very well with vancomycin, Bloom said. The nightmare is that if the gene for vancomycin resistance in enterococcus jumps to staph, we'll have a strain for which we have no appropriate antibiotic on the shelf. And Aton says, well, read it and weep, it has.
Well, it could not be more serious. You don't have anything to back it up. It's like the smallpox strain they've bred. They do not have any way to stop it. Usually they won't create something and mismanage something to the extent that they have that smallpox. And they have no way. They could kill the cows, but it's already passed on genetically. they have boxed themselves into an atrocious corner. But you see, it will get them as well as you if it gets loose. And they have no way of corralling it. Now you don't have any way of corralling even the simple staphylococcus infection that can come with any skin abrasion. You see, you have to understand that ones who get, what do the kids call them, zits?
Mm-hmm.
Well, usually those are little inflammations around the oil pore. And whatever. Sometimes it can be nothing more than a little allergic reaction or a little soil or something that is stuck in that pore. And what you squeeze out of there originally, or what comes to make the white head of the blackhead, you know, it will have this little tiny speck of something that is called a blackhead. But that is because the white cells and the lymphocytes have closed off, walled off, done their job, in other words, come to this foreign material, walled off, and will bring it to the surface so that it can be taken away. Now, peck at that a little while. And in this area, if you can see her face, in this area from the nose piece of the glasses to the corner of the mouth, all drains through the system to the brain. If I could get one thing across in this lesson now, is be very careful. If you get a breaking out around the nasal openings here, in this crease and around the mouth, don't pick at it. Keep your hands clean. Keep it swabbed with oxysol or guaiacol or strong hydrogen peroxide. Don't burn it with 35% or something. Don't be foolish. That opens another blister to deal with. But to squeeze these pimples or little boils that happen in this area, when it drains and when that gets a staph infection, because that's what will infect on the mouth and in the mouth, you will get a herpes virus, your cold sores, your little ulcers. These live with you all the time and they pop up in the, under the right set of circumstances, or damage where you bite your mouth and then it gets infected with this little virus or something that usually amounts to nothing. But this is death-dealing. If you get one of these staph infections in this particular area where the sinuses drain to the brain, you're in trouble. And you see, these things don't show up. Autopsies are not done because someone dies of tuberculosis. They don't go and do brain scans to see why somebody died.